Welcome to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkush, and thrilled you're back with us this week to do a little Week 4 preview. We have some special guests lined up, some Pro Football Weekly contributors will join the program, Jim Wexel of SteelCityInsiders.net, to break down the Pittsburgh pass rush, or lack thereof. He'll also let us know about the return of Le'Veon Bell and what that means for an offense that was unusually grounded last week. After we speak with Jim, we'll bring in Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential. Dan wrote a piece this week actually about the Chiefs' secondary, which he saw up close and personal at Arrowhead last weekend. And certainly we'll get some Jets conversation in as well with Dan Leberfeld. And lastly, I'm gonna drag Hub Arkush back onto the podcast again. I'm kidding. I don't have to drag him on. Hub is always more than willing. But I thought that was a lot of fun when he kind of co-hosted with me last week, and we'll bring him in for a quick segment as well, just to find out what he'll be keying on in Week 4 in the NFL. So just quickly a reminder that if you're not already doing so, you should head over to iTunes and make sure you are subscribing to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. We'd also love it if you left a rating or a comment and kind of let us know what we're doing well, maybe can do better. That's certainly much appreciated. And as always, I have to thank my wonderful producer, Dan Mott, who is spinning the dials and making sure we come through the podcast world clearly and cleanly for you. And that is kind of what I have on tap for you on the PFW podcast this week. So let's not waste any time. We're going to jump right in now with Jim Wexel.
Jim, thank you so much for joining the podcast. What's happening?
Sure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. The pleasure is all ours. We are thrilled with your most recent piece for ProFootballWeekly.com on the Steelers' pass rush, or frankly, a lack thereof. Fascinated, Jim, by several elements of this piece. Keith Butler's unit has just one sack through the first three games, and obviously for the media who covers the Steelers, for the fans that follow that team, that is that's pretty foreign, is it not?
We're counting pressures now, the way they used to count sacks.
Yeah, that's
if you come close
telling
to the quarterback, you get your name in the paper. Yeah.
Jim did a great job of explaining kind of what's going on. It's funny, Jim, I feel like just a couple weeks ago we were kind of applauding Keith Butler for his patient approach. He seemed to be kind of zoning his opponents to death, if you will, and now obviously the byproduct of that is a lack of pressure, and certainly Keith Butler is lamented not being able to get home with four. But tell the listeners kind of A, what the problem is, and B, I guess let's start with kind of what the problem is that Keith Butler's having generating pressure.
Well, they missed on Jarvis Jones, and Bud Dupree is injured. So two number one draft picks since, you know, that's 3 years, 2013, maybe 2012. Maybe I'm getting a year wrong on Jarvis Jones. He's in his fifth year, mm-hmm. has about that many sacks. And, you know, when they drafted Jarvis Jones, they took a little different approach. And it's an evolving game anyway. I mean, you don't line up with five across anymore. You know, the days of Casey Hampton being on the field 70% of the time are long gone.
Right.
So you're lining up with four in your nickel front, which has become your base. Your nickel is your base, pretty mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. So these small defensive ends they used to draft and then stand up. When they were one of the first teams doing it and getting guys like Joey Porter in the third round, things like that, right. where they used to get these fines, Jason Gilden in the third round, James Harrison undrafted. Now more teams started doing it, so it was harder to find. Mm-hmm. And then when they drafted Jarvis Jones, sorry, I lost my phone there for a second. Still
no
there?
No problem.
Okay, so when they drafted Jarvis Jones, they drafted a guy who was already a 3-4 outside linebacker in college. And they explained that, boy, this is great. He's already played the position. He won't need as much training. But my immediate concern was that he's small. He's a 3-4 outside linebacker already in college. He's not used to taking on tackles like Joey Porter was at Colorado State. He had his hand in the dirt. He was a 4-3 end that they changed. So he was physically more rugged already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he could drop, that's great. Okay, so Jarvis Jones is light to begin with. He's not the rugged over the tackle and in college that they normally would draft. So he was, and then all of his athletic numbers were terrible. He even had medical concerns with his spine, and nice guy, don't get me wrong, but he just hasn't come through for them. He's doing some things well, but he's not rushing the passer. And so then they get a bigger guy, Bud Dupree, 2 years ago, a 270-pounder with raw pass rush skills, asked him to lose weight so he could drop better. So what you're seeing are lighter ends who can drop, but with this four-man front, they are defensive ends. And so it's a small group. There are five techs that they drafted, Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt. Great five tech material, but now they're 4-3 defensive tackles, so they're even small. So they're getting blocked. They're not and without that, you know, Von Miller, I don't know what he weighs, and I don't think it matters because he's going to get home. Some of these guys can do it. And I think the hope is still there that Bud Dupree can be one of those guys, but he's out half the season. He's not there. So they have no real pass rusher. You know, Tuitt and Hayward are nice pass rushers in the middle, but they're not elite pass rushers. And Cam's playing with a high ankle sprain too. So you put all that together, and you know, so with some of the, I went into the article about how they've got some Tampa 2 influence in there, and Monty Kiffin came to practice last year and looked it over and commented on it, and I go through all of that. And so you've got some hybrid thinking going on, and an evolving game. The lack of the 3-4 outside linebacker coming off the edge over tight ends is now lining up over tackles and just getting blocked. And then also the personnel is just not as good as what they're used to.
So what this all means, I assume, Jim, is that the Keith Butler, maybe despite his wishes, is going to have to get a little more creative. Creative probably isn't even the word, but just a little bit more aggressive. I know that in his first year in place of Dick LeBeau, he was quite aggressive and the pass rush developed, but it came at the expense of the coverage on the back end, the NFL's 31st ranked pass defense. Now, Pittsburgh, of course, has went super young with the likes of Artie Burns and the kid out of Maryland, whose name is escaping me, Sean Davis, is that right?
Right.
So what now? I know Butler would prefer to get home with four, but you've just laid out why that may not be realistic at the moment. Maybe it will be Sunday versus Alex Smith, someone who is renowned for taking sacks over throwing picks, but what do you anticipate is the solution there, if there is one?
Well, yeah, blitz more. Yeah. I mean, I think you've got it in a nutshell. I think you summed up the problems, and blitzing more exposes Artie Burns, and you know, Sean Davis is hurt, and Rob Golden, their strong safety, is hurt. So Justin Gilbert's going to see action this week, the former Cleveland Brown. And Artie Burns is going to see more action. And Jordan, I almost called him Rodney, Jordan Dangerfield will get his first start at strong safety.
Okay.
And so, you know, that secondary that he didn't want to expose last week is even younger now. So, blitz more, you know, Carson Wentz, let's give him some credit, and let's give Doug Peterson some credit. Mm-hmm. Great game, great play calling, great passing. You know, it was so many screens. You weren't going to blitz that team anyway. You were going to get burned if you did. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much time they gave a pass rush anyway. And that was just a great spot for the Eagles the week. The emotions are up, that town. That's just Pittsburgh 2004 with Ben Roethlisberger coming in. That town sees 10-plus years now of winning, and with good reason. I think Wentz is for real. And they're exciting, and boy, Pittsburgh never wins in Philly, and Pittsburgh is a flat spot on the schedule following Monday night and then Cincinnati. So it was just a perfect storm for the city of Philly to celebrate and just roll over the Steelers. So I don't know that the Steelers are that bad and the Eagles are that good, but it was a perfect storm last week. But this week you have the same school of thought. Doug Peterson came out of Kansas City.
Of course.
You're going to see a lot more of that short passing game. I don't know that Kansas City has the kind of weapons that Philadelphia is showing with Darren Sproles, and the Steelers are going to have to tackle better. But as we talked about a few weeks ago, how good Ryan Shazier is, he's out. So, you know, and he was a guy that you could bring from inside linebacker to get home as a pass rusher on a blitz. He could get there. And now that option is off the table, and they will have Vince Williams, a slower, more old-school type of run plugger. So, you know, I don't know what Keith can do. Just hope Alex Smith isn't anywhere as accurate as Carson Wentz was.
Right. Jim, what it sounds like, and well, first of all, it was a good segue because I did want to ask you about Carson Wentz. We had a chance to see him up close and personal 2 weeks ago in Chicago, and trust me, he did the same thing to the Bears defense you're kind of saying happened last week. But, and again, he's three games into his career, and this is not reasonable, but because of the matchup last week, there was a lot of talk of it, and you just mentioned it was kind of a similar hysteria to what it was when Ben Roethlisberger came into the league. Do you see similarities in their skill set? Again, I don't want to compare Carson Wentz to a future Hall of Famer, a Super Bowl champion, but just the way they go about their business with the size and the strength and the arm talent. Did you find yourself saying, wow, this looks kind of like something I've seen before?
Well, there's a three-quarter delivery. Some of the pictures, the still shots, were exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tall guy who can drop it down a little bit. It's not, they're not dropping it down like Phillip Rivers does, but... So that is similar, and the size is similar, and the small college is similar. The fact they have the same agent is similar. The fact they get along and had dinner and worked out over the summer,
right.
Similar. Carson Wentz, maybe a little more cerebral. Ben Roethlisberger, maybe a little more fearless and just bull stronger. Maybe Wentz has a little better mobility. Ben was pretty mobile, but he was more strong. You know, if you remember, he used to shake off Terrell Suggs from his shoulder pads and then throw deep. Ben looks to throw deep more. Maybe probably has a better deep ball. I don't want to say Ben's not cerebral. After all these years, he knows exactly what he's doing and what he wants, and he's become a great student of the game that maybe he wasn't when he was a young and reckless rookie, whereas Wentz seems to be more of a student of a game already. Those are some of the things I see. Wentz is throwing a lot of shorter stuff. But I see a lot of similarities in confidence and team. I think the Eagles have a team around them like Ben did, a defense and some talent, a really good offensive line. Ben had to go through a rebuilding of the offensive line, and now he finally has a really good offensive line number two for him. Wentz seems to have a good line right now, and Sproles, and I think Jordan Matthews can develop into a talent. Maybe Doriel Green Beckham can become the Plexico Burris that Ben had. So, yeah, no similarities or some, yeah.
Spending a few more minutes chatting here with Jim Wexel, of course, the publisher of SteelCityInsiders.net and also a contributor to Pro Football Weekly. Jim, we've talked a little bit about the defense. The sense I'm getting is that, and I guess it's fortunate for the Steelers, the way they are built, they're probably going to be in their fair share of shootouts this season. But let's talk for a minute about the offense. Also an unusual sight for you, I'm sure, is a Ben Roethlisberger attack being held out of the end zone. I think it had been 2 years since that had happened. Obviously a big boost coming this week with the return of Le'Veon Bell. Did you think that was an aberration and going up, like you just alluded to, against a talented defense that was really set and perhaps a bit of a trap game for Pittsburgh, or is there more concern after really just one bad outing for the offense?
All the things you said, the emotion, the underrated Philly defense.
Okay. Yep.
The problems Pittsburgh has in Philly for whatever reason. But also, I think what was exposed is the Steelers' lack of a number two receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marcus Wheaton dropped the touchdown pass. And I did not even expect Marcus to be in that first group. He struggled through a week of practice coming back from a shoulder injury.
Okay.
So that drop, and he was fighting the ball. And he was fighting the ball in practice, and that's not him. He's a smooth pass catcher.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what kind of problems he's having. These guys don't go into too much detail with their injuries. But I expect that to improve. Marcus Wheaton's a better player than what he showed.
Okay.
And Sammy Coates is a deep threat to a degree. He's the deep threat that they have. But he's not Martavis Bryant. I mean, that was such a big loss.
Yeah.
out for the year. He was, you know, I referenced Plexico Burress before, and Ben loves to get mobile, move a little bit, and heave deep to a real tall big man way down the field. That's what Martavis Bryant caused you to bring a safety over the top. Sammy Coates is a threat, but not that kind of threat. I mean, he's not going to scare a defense into not doubling Antonio Brown. So Antonio Brown gets bracketed. The number two guys are not instilling the fear that Martavis Bryant did. And there's no Heath Miller over the middle as a release. Now, Le'Veon Bell will relieve some of that. He's a great pass catcher. You're going to see a lot of him in the slot with D'Angelo Williams running the ball as well. Okay. But Le'Veon Bell looks great in practice running the ball, too. So that's a big threat who's back on the field for them. That'll help alleviate their problem at number two receiver and still the growing tight ends. They're still maturing.
And I know, Jim, there was one kind of under the radar, well, under the radar nationally receiver that they were excited about in Eli Rogers. I believe he suffered a toe injury last week. Can you tell us about this, to the extent of your knowledge, how concerned they are about that and maybe his ability to slide back in and also help kind of remedy some of the issues that popped up last week?
Right. Well, it's a turf toe injury, and he won't play this week. And Le'Veon Bell will in fact, now, this is not what anything I'm seeing in practice. This is what Ben Roethlisberger talked about the other day, that he expects Le'Veon Bell to be an option as a slot receiver. And we talked to Le'Veon, and he said, hey, you know, we're just working on all things. Yes, I'm working there, but I'm also working at running back. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to be the slot receiver. So he's one option. Marcus Wheaton was their slot guy last year. And Eli, it's not like he is some polished vet. He was a first-year player. And he was showing a lot of potential and doing some good things. But against Philly, they shut him down, too. Just a bad week all around for all these young guys. So this is a young guy with a lot of talent who won't be able to play this week, and there are some options to take his place.
Okay. And just on the way out, Jim, we really appreciate the time. Just overall, your thoughts on the first meeting between Antonio Brown and Kansas City's ascending star, Marcus Peters. That secondary overall is tremendous. Just maybe that matchup in particular, what you anxiously await to see, and then how you kind of see Sunday overall shaking out. Does Pittsburgh go ahead and get well?
Yeah, they played each other last year, but Antonio did not have Ben. Antonio was taking passes from Landry Jones, so the first. Yeah,
okay.
And so whatever minuscule numbers Antonio may have put up in that game will be different this time. And, you know, it Marcus Peters, boy, who didn't want him in Pittsburgh for a secondary starved at draft time, but he just had the red dot, and they were not going to take him in the first round because he was kicked off his college team. And, you know, the Rooneys do not want to have that press conference with the question, why were you kicked off your team with the first round pick? It's just not going to happen. So that was a letdown at Pittsburgh, did not even want him in the first round, but he went before them. And, he, you know, everybody in Pittsburgh knows Marcus Peters, and now they're looking at all the interceptions. Antonio, if Ben can shake free from Tom Bahali, the Steelers are also having some offensive line issues at left guard. They're down to their fourth left guard and not much depth. If there's an injury this week, there's going to be a problem. And so there's that. If Ben can get free, then Antonio gets free, and that's when they're most dangerous. And Marcus Peters will have to, what do they call that, not stick with them. What do they yell
shadow or travel with him, or
something like that. Yeah, one of those words. And so that's what he's going to have to do with Antonio. That's when Antonio and Ben are at their best.
Well, I am super excited to watch that matchup and kind of what I view as one of the better games of the week. I don't know, Jim, if you pick games, but do you have a feeling on which way things go Sunday?
Well, somebody told me the Chiefs were getting 5.5 points. That kind of surprised me as a lock. Dangerous game. I still believe there's some emotional reeling after this emotional start with the Monday night followed by a Bengals game. And they seem to be fighting it well in practice. I'm a little tired standing on the sideline. I'm emotionally drained. I know that. But they seem to be fighting it well, and they know how important this is as they get players back like Le'Veon Bell, and then eventually Bud Dupree may give them a pass rush, and guys like that, LaDarius Green, a tight end, a 6'6 deep threat as a tight end. He could come back at half midway. So if they can hang on to this lead in the division until their guys get back, so they know how important this game is, especially it's an AFC game.
Yeah, no doubt. Will be a ton of fun to watch. And, Jim, a ton of fun to have you on the Pro Football Weekly podcast once again. We appreciate it. Once again, to our listeners, make sure you check out Jim's work, both at SteelCityInsiders.net, of course, but also at Pro Football Weekly. I'll go ahead and link to your pass rush story. I don't know if it's still on the front carousel, but I'll send a link out on Twitter this afternoon. And, Jim, enjoy the game this weekend, and I hope we can get you back on the program soon.
Anytime. Thank you very much. It was fun.
That was Jim Wexel of SteelCityInsiders.net.
Looking for gear, collectibles, houseware, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises? We've got you covered. Loot Crate offers a range of geek and gamer items for less than $20 a month. Want to bring your loot to the next level? Get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. If you're more the type to wear your geeky heart on your sleeve, then Lootwear, our monthly wearables and accessories subscription, is the droid you are looking for. That chill running up your spine is not your imagination. It's Loot Crate's October theme horror. We're taking over 40 years of creepy, campy, bloody icons and putting them in this month's crate. Channel your best final girl with items from The Walking Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code SHAW to save $3 off any new subscription today. Great discussion there with Jim Wexel. It'll be interesting to see if Keith Butler can get the pass rush going, can get that pass defense where it needs to be without leaving out some of his young guys to dry, as Jim alluded to. Also loved some of the discussion regarding Le'Veon Bell and maybe seeing D'Angelo and Le'Veon on the field together. Fantasy owners, perhaps your Le'Veon Bell stake isn't useless just yet. Keep an eye on how that kind of rotation, how that Steelers offense shakes out with the return of Bell. Thank you again to Jim Wexel for joining the program. Next up, Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential. Let's talk a little bit of Chiefs and, of course, Dan's area of expertise, the Jets.
Pleased to be joined next on this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast by another special guest. We have Dan Leberfeld. In addition to being a Pro Football Weekly contributor, he is, of course, the publisher over at Jets Confidential. You can find his work there. And at PFW, he wrote a good story this week about the Kansas City Chiefs secondary. Dan, I know you got to see this unit up close and personal when they kind of put one on the Jets. What do you think is the ceiling for this secondary, of course, led by All-Pro Eric Berry and ascending star Marcus Peters? What's your impression of this group?
Yeah, the arrow's pointing up on this secondary. When you look at that Jet game where Ryan Fitzpatrick threw the six interceptions against the Chiefs, five against the secondary, one to the linebacker Derek Johnson, it's so easy to point the finger at Fitzpatrick, and he deserves a lot of blame and a lot of criticism. But I thought the Kansas City secondary was superb, and I thought Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator, really formulated a great game plan. And this group back there, when you look at it, they might have the best safety in football in Eric Berry. I mean, you could debate that, but he's definitely in the top three or four. And then you look at Marcus Peters, who could emerge as the best cornerback in football the way he's going. Two picks against the Houston Texans the week before the Jets game, and then two picks against the Jets. His ball skills and instincts are unbelievable. I thought the safety Daniel Sorensen also looked good, who plays next to Berry. And, you know, they just had Philip Gaines playing well at the other cornerback spot. It was one of those games where everything came together for them. So, yeah, the Jets were pretty bad in the passing game, but I think the Chiefs had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, no doubt. Chat with Dan Leberfeld, and we'll certainly get to some Jets talk here in a couple minutes. But, you know, Dan, I think it's easy to forget that that's a group that also lost Sean Smith in free agency, lost a key safety in Abdullah to retirement. It's amazing the way they plug guys in, and I think Philip Gaines actually was hurt a lot of last year. So you said it, in coordinator Bob Sutton, they're doing some terrific work. What was the pass rush like on Fitzpatrick? Was it a lot of, we won't call it unforced errors, because you said that the Chiefs made some great plays, but was he hurried into some bad decisions, or was that mostly just the secondary showing up?
Well, there was pressure on some plays. It wasn't the greatest performance by the Chiefs pass rush. We've seen so many great ones. And that's another thing that needs to be brought up, and I mentioned this in the article for Pro Football Weekly, is that, you know, this work's being done without Justin Houston, one of the game's best pass rushers. So,
right.
You know, we all know a secondary's best friend is a great pass rush. So if Houston comes back and is able to regain his prior form, this secondary could get even better. Secondary did get some help from the pass rush. You know, Tom Holley's is solid. He's not the same guy. He's had a lot of injuries over the years. Mm-hmm. And interesting, you know, I was expecting to see Dee Ford, but Frank Zombo was starting ahead of him. Frank Zombo did some good things. So, yeah, I think it's only going to get better for the Chiefs secondary if Houston can come back and be that guy he was before.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're right now the Chiefs 29th in the NFL in sack percentage, so we really can't say enough about the way that defense has kind of evolved without Houston around, obviously. They got used to it last year playing without him, and some definite playmakers in that group. Should be fun to watch them head out to Pittsburgh now and get kind of an angry Steelers offense that was grounded for the first time in a long time. I had, prior to you joining the program, Jim Wexel from SteelCityInsiders.net was breaking down that matchup between Antonio Brown and Marcus Peters a little bit. He corrected me. I didn't realize they met last year, but that was without Ben Roethlisberger. So do you think this is a unit, the Chiefs, that's kind of, you know, poised to build on its success? I know you're not going to get two picks from Marcus Peters every week, but it would seem that they should match up pretty well against a Steelers offense that's kind of still trying to find its way a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to that Marcus Peters matchup against Antonio Brown. You're not going to stop Antonio Brown, but Marcus right. Peters is such a rare talent. And the thing that players are saying about him and Andy Reid was saying about him, you know, sometimes when a guy is physically gifted, we all point to the speed and the athleticism and all those kind of things. This guy is a gym rat, too. I mean, he's working really hard. So when on game day, he's very prepared and he's working on his technique all the time. So that's one of the great matchups to watch this week, Marcus Peters against Antonio Brown. And, you know, the thing about Phillip Gaines is he seemed to tweak that knee last week, so that's something to keep an eye on. He was limping after the game. He's had some knee problems. But he's a good matchup. He did a really good job on Brandon Marshall. You know, Gaines is a taller corner at 6'1", and he matched up well with Marshall. And so if he can play the way he played last week, another guy who played well was, I don't know if he's the nickelback per se, but Ron Parker also did some good work. So they're coming together in the secondary. And Derek Johnson at 33, one of the game's best coverage linebackers, to me is still the same guy. Really hasn't lost much after a decade in the league.
Yeah, unbelievable. Derek Johnson, you know, has the serious injury 2 years ago and seemingly comes back better than ever last year, and it sounds like he's building on that quite a bit. So, yeah, the Chiefs, as long as that defense keeps performing that way and, you know, they get Jamaal Charles back potentially this week, that should be, I would imagine, a force to be reckoned with in the AFC. Dan, your particular area of expertise, though, of course, is the Jets, and I do want to spend a few minutes discussing what they've got going on, and I know they're, you know, they won't get a lot of sympathy, but I think we can probably both agree they have had the toughest schedule in the NFL to open the season, probably even extending out through the next 2 or 3 weeks. They have Seattle coming to town Sunday and then hit the road, I believe, for two. Arizona, who do they have before Arizona?
Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Pittsburgh and Arizona, right. I mean, in the position they're in then at this point, it's not an enviable one, but does Sunday kind of become a must-win against a Seahawks team coming across country and with a hobbled Russell Wilson?
Yeah, it's definitely a must-win with this schedule, and the fact is, you know, Russell Wilson now has a high ankle sprain and an MCL sprain, and you know that, you know, he's a warrior and he's so tough, but it's going to take away from him. And their offensive line, it's well documented, the offensive line is a work in progress, and they move guys all over the place, different spots, and they're still trying to come together. You know, Justin Britt moving to center, and I don't know if the rookie Afedi's going to play. He's been dealing with a high ankle sprain. Jets defensive line is outstanding, so that doesn't look like a good matchup. But to be honest with you, I thought last week the Chiefs had both starting guards out. Mm-hmm. I thought the Jets, you know, outstanding defensive tackle group of Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and Leonard Williams. Now, they had some plays, but I thought they'd be more dominant. So you know, maybe the Seahawks can surprise us in terms of how they block up this group. But it will be at home, you know, as far as the crowd noise at MetLife Stadium helping that pass rush. And they're embarrassed by what happened last week, the team. So this was a week where they basically assessed everything they were doing and you know, really are, the head coach, Todd Bowles, said, it was the come to Jesus moment for the Jets as far as really focusing on what's going on here, what do we have to improve. And there's no shortage of talent. They do have some injuries, though, entering this game. Eric Decker is iffy with a shoulder injury. Jalen Marshall, another receiver and returner, he's iffy with a shoulder injury. So the injuries are starting to add up here. They have some other injuries as well. So, you know, that no one feels bad for this league. Everybody's got some injury problems.
Of course. And, Dan, with Eric Decker's status being iffy, as you said, where do you think Brandon Marshall's at with the knee injury? I know he fought through it last week but wasn't overly effective. And again, maybe that's a byproduct of the Chiefs' secondary. Obviously, he faces another really good one. For all Seattle's offensive woes, that defense pretty much looks as good as ever. It's not forcing the takeaways just yet, but otherwise really stout. So what do you think about Brandon Marshall's availability? And then Quincy Enunwa, if you could just tell our listeners, I know he has come on strong this season, kind of opened some eyes.
Yeah, this is a very tough matchup for the Jets receivers. We all know how good the Seahawks secondary is, but the thing is, you know, they get those big physical corners, and when you look at Brandon Marshall, you look at Quincy Enunwa, and if Eric Decker plays, these are big physical receivers who don't necessarily have great speed. They're all 4.5, 4.6 type guys, right, but they win a lot of jump balls, 50-50 balls that Fitzpatrick throws them open, and this goes back to one of the problems last week. When the Jets played the Bills, everything seemed to be working. You know, those 50-50 balls Fitzpatrick threw to his spot, the receivers were getting it. Kansas City did not give very big windows for these things to work, and they were all over these jump ball situations. So if you're going to throw people open as much as Fitzpatrick does, you know, you live by that, you die by that. You're throwing very, very risky passes. Mm-hmm. It worked in Buffalo. It didn't work against Kansas City. It could be a real challenge against Seattle with the big physical corners who match up well against the Jets' big physical receivers. Quincy Enunwa has had a breakout season this year, a third-year player out of Nebraska, 6'2", 225. He operates out of the slot, which creates some interesting matchups, and it also allows him to be a force in run blocking. Mm-hmm. He is one of the best blocking receivers in the league, and he really helps their running game a great deal and gets so many key blocks. You know, operating so close to the line ahead of the slot, he's taking on defensive ends and linebackers. And, you know, some people say he's a hybrid player, tight end, wide receiver. Whatever you want to call him, he's definitely taken a huge step this year.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch develop, and, you know, there's such, you know, potency potentially with that passing offense, but like you said, it seems like it can be hit or miss from one week to the next. Let me ask you, though, after just a dreadful performance, what's the sort of mindset or what's sort of the message revolving around Ryan Fitzpatrick this week? I assume everyone's rallying around him, but I swear I've seen some national pundits saying maybe Geno Smith could be getting a look sooner than later. What's the dynamic like there?
Well, I think because of Fitzpatrick's history and because of that performance in Week 17 in Buffalo last year, we had the three costly picks that kept him out of the playoffs. They needed a win to get in. So you juxtapose that Buffalo game, and we're not that far removed from it. When you look at the beginning of this season, people go, you know, that same old Fitz, he's going to throw those key interceptions. So he's got to prove those people wrong. Honestly, you know, aside from that horrible game against Buffalo in Week 17, mm-hmm. he really didn't throw a lot of picks last year. Outside of that game, he would have 12 interceptions in the other 15 games. That's not a terrible season. So he's got to just be more careful. And he has a tendency to make up his mind where he's going with the football, you know, the second the ball snapped. And he's got to cut back on that a little bit. Sometimes it's just not there. Two picks last week, he forced it into double coverage to Jalen Marshall, who's not a big receiver, and Jalen Marshall into double coverage. And one of the plays was on Marcus Peters. I mean, who in his right mind would say, you know, we got Jalen Marshall, a rookie, undrafted rookie free agent going against Marcus Peters. Let's go there. You know,
yeah.
It's like, come on, man, that's ridiculous. But I'll tell you what, with this passage, you keep an eye on this guy. Robbie Marshall Robbie Anderson, there's so many Marshalls, I'm calling them all Marshalls, Brandon Marshall, Jalen Marshall. Robbie Anderson, an undrafted free agent out of Temple. If you saw Jets camp this summer and you watched their preseason games, you would have thought this guy went in the first or second round. That's how good he was. Wow. He legitimately runs 4.3. He runs very good routes. He doesn't drop a football. I mean, this guy, you know those certain receivers where you throw it to him, you expect him to catch it? He's that kind of guy. I think one of the reasons he fell through the cracks is he's a little on the skinny side, you know, 6'3", 190, but he's very tough. This guy is going to have a role this week, and don't be shocked if he has a couple big plays. The spotlight's not too big for him, and he legitimately runs under 4.4, and he's 6'3", so he's got that length, so he goes up against the football. I tell you what, the Jets really hit on some late round receiver was Sherron Peak, who hasn't played a lot, but he was very good this summer. And then two undrafted rookie receivers, and Jalen Marshall and Robbie Anderson. I thought of the three. You know, Jalen Marshall got so much attention this summer. I thought that Anderson was the best of the three. And it'll be interesting to see what he does this week, because to me, this guy was an absolute steal as an undrafted free agent.
Good stuff from Dan Leberfeld, the publisher of Jets Confidential. You can also find his work at ProFootballWeekly.com. Just a last question. I'd be remiss, Dan, if I didn't – I mean, we didn't really talk much about the defense. Just kind of the state of the Jets defense. I know there was some hand-wringing about Darrell Revis's early season performance, but do you think that this is something that's going to get steadied and this will continue to be, you know, one of the league's better units? Where are the concerns you see, and does that defensive front look like it's ready to just start dominating for a sustained period?
Well, the defensive line is solid. The linebackers, well, they've had some injuries there. Mm-hmm. Aaron Henderson was out last week with a foot injury. He might come back this week. Darren Lee is hit or miss, because Darren Lee, the first-round pick out of Ohio State, great speed, runs sideline to sideline, but then there are plays where they run right at him, and he gets locked up by a guard, and he can't shed it. 6'1", 232 pounds. He's just he's more of a Carolina, Tampa Bay type linebacker than the Jets 3-4 type linebacker. But he makes spectacular plays running around, but to me, against the run, he can be a liability. I as far as the secondary, I just think they're very average. I really do. When you look at Revis, things aren't going to get better there. He's lost a step. You saw the two long touchdowns on him in the first two games last week. That didn't happen. But too often, a young quick receiver will do a crossing route, cutting from the sideline across the middle, and he's trailing behind him because he just doesn't run like he used to, and that's not going to change. And it was a very bad contract the Jets gave out. Imagine he's getting $17 million guaranteed this year, and you look at how he's playing, not a great contract to give a cornerback who was 30 when he got the contract, this kind of money, not very pragmatic. So that's a situation that could be a problem all year. They need to protect him more. The idea of putting him on the other team's best receiver every week is fool's gold. It's not a good idea. Marcus Williams is pretty solid on the other side. Buster Screen is very inconsistent. I mean, he's really fast and really strong and really tough, but he's often a tick late reacting to pass route combinations. So, you know, they spent a lot of money on the secondary last year. I don't think they're getting a lot of bang for their buck, but we all know, as we said it before about Kansas City, if that front seven can wreak havoc consistently, that will certainly help the secondary. They're going to need this kid, I think, to help them out. Darrell Roberts, who was claimed on waivers from the New England Patriots, who runs really well, runs under 4.4. They need another fast corner in the mix back there. Mm-hmm. So now Roberts is healthy. He came here with a foot injury, so they might need him. This secondary, I tell you, I didn't even get to this, the safeties. The former first-round pick, Calvin Pryor, not having a good year.
Okay. Interesting stuff. You know, it sounds, we're here in Chicago, so it sounds a lot like the Bears pass rush that they've invested so heavily in that isn't showing up thus far. It'll be interesting to see. And you took the words out of my mouth. We started with the Chiefs about how right now maybe the secondary is covering up the front seven that's a little undermanned right now. It sounds like it'll have to be the opposite, the more traditional setting for the Jets. Dan, on the way out, and thank you so much again for your time. I don't know if you pick games, but do you have a feeling how Sunday shakes out, and what you said really is a desperate spot for the Jets?
Very tough game to predict, because it's hard to discern what Russell Wilson will bring to the table, the high ankle sprain and an MCL sprain.
Yep.
But he's always so dangerous, but we aren't that far removed from that Rams game where he wasn't very good and the offensive line wasn't very good. So I think the Jets win a close game here, a three-point type game, because they're at home. They have to win. They took a shot in the gut as far as their pride last week. They're embarrassed, and they do have a lot of talent. So I think they figure out a way to win a close game at home against Seattle. If Russell Wilson was healthy and the Seahawks offensive line was more solid, I'd probably pick the Seahawks. But with the quarterback hurt behind a shaky line, I'll go with the Jets in a close game.
All right, there you have it. That's Dan Leberfeld, the publisher of Jets Confidential. You can find him on Twitter if you're not following him, at Jets Whispers. And Dan, great stuff today. We really do appreciate all the contributions to Pro Football Weekly, and I hope you enjoy the game Sunday, and let's talk again soon, okay?
Anytime, Arthur.
And we thank Dan again for that discussion. A lot of good stuff. Kind of brought a few potential dark horses to the table this week with Eric Decker banged up, and didn't mince words with the state of what he called a very average Jets secondary. I'll tell you, that is an expensive secondary to be average, but Dan certainly said as much, and it'll be fun to see if the Jets can kind of extend their season. I know that sounds nuts in week four, but when you had two Pittsburgh and two Arizona in weeks five and six, there's no question that the Jets have their backs against the wall this early in the year. For our final guest on today's podcast, I don't know if I can call him a guest. He kind of signs my checks, and he's done a little bit more than that for me, actually. But I want to bring in our football content director, our publisher, our editor, our jack of all trades, Hub Arkish, to see what he is interested in watching in week four of the NFL.
Let's kind of launch right in, Hub. I'm curious what sort of strikes your fancy when you look at the week four slate. We're starting to learn more about these teams and what they may look like for the duration of an entire week's, you know, a 17 week slate, if you will. But what interests you this week? What are the stories that you'll be following?
Well, there's a game about with two teams that I just don't feel I know enough about that I think is going to be really interesting. You've got the 2-1 Oakland Raiders doing that dreaded coast-to-coast, left-to-right trip to Baltimore, where the Ravens are 3-0. And, you know, for my money, probably the least impressive 3-0 team that I've seen in a long time. But all that matters is 3-0. And so really curious to see how this one goes. You've got Joe Flacco, good at times, not so good at times, kind of the story of the Joe Flacco career. You've got a running game that they can't quite seem to figure out. They're playing great defense. They got Terrell Suggs back in the middle of it, and they've had three really meager opponents. Now, you've got Oakland, who has been very up and down, but awful on defense, so that should play well to Flacco being able to establish some stuff. And yet that Oakland offense so explosive, and they have managed to win two of their three games. So really curious to see how this one goes, and wouldn't be surprised if Oakland gives them a lot tougher time than their first three opponents have.
Yeah, that will be a fun one. The Raiders have done a ton of traveling already. I kind of feel like they're sort of the road-weary Raiders, and does seem to be kind of a tough spot. Interesting with the Ravens how, you're right, they're obviously undefeated and they're doing it on defense, but I think maybe with Joe Flacco coming off serious injury, with Steve Smith coming off serious injury, with them still waiting on Kenneth Dixon, the rookie running back who has a chance to really take over that backfield, maybe as soon as Sunday, probably more likely next week, maybe this is kind of a good setup for the Ravens in that, you know, they've had the luxury of leaning on that defense while the offense finds its footing. What do you think, Hub?
Well, it could be. I think one of the things you got to look at with Baltimore, though, is they did some major renovation on that offensive line. And we know that offensive lines take longer than other units to come together to get the timing down. Right. But you also have to hope that you got the right talent in there. You know? And the one other thing that I would look at in this one on the other side is, as bad as Oakland has been on defense, not sure where Khalil Mack has been. Nobody's talking about it. Three games, no sacks. He hasn't been a huge factor. And I've got a sneaking suspicion with Terrell Suggs on the football field, Elvis Dumervil's making his return for the Ravens this week. Jack Del Rio has talked about he's not worried about Mack. They expect it to come. I'd keep an eye on the potential for a breakout performance there. Again, assuming that I'm not underrating the whole coast-to-coast thing. We know how difficult it is. You're right. The Raiders have spent a lot of time on the road. But I can just see a lot of reasons why Del Rio, at least for his defense, would have targeted this game. So I keep an eye on 52 in silver and black, or I guess they'll be in white and black and silver this week. It should be interesting to see what he can get done.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth about Mac, and I'm trying to think. Ronnie Stanley healthy right now? Will Mac see some of him Sunday, do you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't really looked at the lineups and the injury list all that closely. It certainly will be fun if he does. Again, that Baltimore offensive line trying to settle in.
Right.
I think Mac's issues have been Mac's issues to this point, so it'll be really fun if they can get those two together.
Hub, do you think the did the Bengals kind of get right last night? It looked like the running game was still a little choppy, but I guess when you can just throw it up to A.J. Green and have him almost outproduce the entire Dolphins offense, it's not a bad thing to be able to fall back on.
Well, they got a win they had to get. Their defense played much better. Vontaze Burfict came back, and obviously, as much as the guy discussed, many of us have covered the NFL, he is significant in that huddle, and they played well. Now, did they get right? Actually, no, they didn't. They still only ran for 77 yards. Andy Dalton still got dumped again, pressured a few times. And they can't score in the red zone. You know, we keep hearing about Tyler Eifert, and I understand that Tyler Eifert is, got quite a lot of touchdown passes in the red zone last year, but that can't be an excuse for an entire football team, especially one that has A.J. Green. So I think they got a key win. They settled things down. Now they've got 10 days to continue to try and get back where they want to be, but they got to answer that ground game and those red zone problems before we can say the Bengals are where they really need to be.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, and it will be interesting to monitor how soon Eifert can get back and how much he does help. On the other side of things, are the Dolphins, well, I have to assume this season is now pretty much a lost cause, but maybe even more so than that, how many poor performances does Ryan Tannehill have left before Adam Gase maybe starts thinking the same thing of him, a guy he inherited?
Well, I think he gets a few more with four starting offensive linemen on the sidelines, that's for sure. It's I'm not sure he was all that awful considering the circumstances. I think that a lot is expected of Miami because even though they were bad last year and brought in a new head coach, they didn't go the full rebuilding route. You know, they actually went veteran mode on defense, and so it's reasonable to expect a little bit more of them. But on the offensive side, they jettisoned Lamar Miller for reasons that I will never understand, and then found themselves wanting and brought in Arian Foster, who ended up where he usually does on the injury list. And Gase has been very unhappy with his second-year back, Jay Ajayi, even though he did get the winning score in overtime last week against Cleveland. And then you have four starting offensive linemen out. So I think there's a lot more going on with that offense than just the play of Ryan Tannehill right now. And my guess is that, the rookie head coach understands that him and Tannehill are kind of joined at the hip. It's one of the reasons that Gase was an easy choice for, Steve Ross and Mike Tannenbaum down there. And I'm guessing that there'll be a lot more work with Tannehill before they get too concerned.
Right, and it's not like they have anyone waiting in the wings. I believe it is still Matt Moore, and I don't think his best football is in front of him. So it'll be fun to watch, although I'll say, if missing a bunch of offensive linemen or not, it just seems like Tannehill's struggling to feel the pressure, and one thing he has had going for him in recent years is ability to protect the football, and that hasn't been the case this year either, so it'll be interesting to see. Hub, what about Adam Gase's decision? He benches Byron Maxwell last night, and A.J. Green just destroys the young guys, Tony Lippett and Xavien Howard. Does that send the message? I know Maxwell wasn't good the previous week, but that maybe looks like a little bit of a miscalculation by Gase. I know it's easy to say here on Friday morning.
It could very well be. I think we have to remember, though, that A.J. Green is one of the four or five best wide receivers in football, and so he's likely going to do that to a lot of people.
Right.
And I think beyond that, Maxwell's been bad for a while. So this is the unhappy lot of the rookie head coach, of the guys who take over these bad football teams. And, 3, now 4 weeks in, we're looking for some instant gratification. I think that, Gase is clearly learning on the job. I'm not saying it was the right move to sit Maxwell down. But I think it's really hard. We sing their praises when we see the Doug Petersons of the world who jump right in and get off to this great start.
Right.
And I think that's fair. I think that guys like Peterson are worthy of some praise and congratulations. but you don't assume that they're ready for a Coach of the Year award or a Super Bowl. And then I think it's, you know, it's the opposite with these guys who are struggling. You've got to remember where Dolphins and the Dolphins and Gase are starting from. And I can't read too much into any of this. I you know, we're based in Chicago. We got to watch Gase work all year last year with the Bears offense and with Jay Cutler. And he did some things that other coaches have not been able to do. So I think my evaluation at this point is he was ready for his first head coaching job. Now you got to wait at least a year and a half or two and figure out if he's any good at it.
Right, right. And, you know, I think we were both adamant about perhaps Mike Tannenbaum not necessarily setting Gase up for optimal success in the offseason. If Mario Williams is making an impact, I've yet to see it. But we're not want to spend the whole podcast talking about the Dolphins. Hub, you've had an MRI or two over the years, and I'm guessing maybe you were a little afraid going into one or two of them, but you did show up. Your thoughts on the situation in Dallas and Dez Bryant and the handling of the just this entire mess?
Well, let's be clear. I've had, after a couple back surgeries, a couple knee surgeries, elbow surgery, you got to get MRIs before all of them. So I've done it a few times.
Right.
And, you know, I think the point that we need to realize, there's nothing in the test to be afraid of. It wasn't the MRI that was bothering Dez Bryant. It's nothing, you know, unless you're claustrophobic. You even got the open air MRIs now. He was concerned about what the results were going to show. He was afraid that, you know, he was going to have a long term injury. But that's about as childish and immature as it gets. And at some point, you know, we have to accept that Dez Bryant is an absolute world-class talent. Coming off of 2 years ago, I ranked him the best receiver in the NFL with a absolute, you know, single-A minor league brain. I mean, it's just and that probably sounds cruel. I don't mean to be cruel. I understand you get what you're born with. But this is a guy, you know, who 5-6 years into his NFL career, he hasn't matured. He hasn't grown. He's the same guy. He's not having the outrageous outbursts on the sidelines. Of course, part of that's because he hasn't been on the sidelines as much the last year and 3 weeks. He's been injured. But it's just typical to me, Dallas Cowboy dysfunction, because there's really no, if you understand the phrase I'm about to use, football adults running that organization. And so, you know, there's no justification for it, but bottom line is it doesn't really matter. You know, he's going to probably miss the 2-3 weeks regardless, and it's just another silly Dez Bryant story.
Yeah, the irony, of course, of the whole situation is that Dez Bryant did seem to avoid a catastrophic injury as a hairline fracture in his, I believe, his right knee. But like Hub just said, it could be a week. It could be 4 weeks. We'll have to wait and see. Before we move on to another kind of petulant wide receiver around the league, Hub, do you think the Cowboys at least learned last year from maybe rushing Dez Bryant back too soon, arguably rushing Tony Romo back too soon? The Cowboys should be able to get by without Dez in San Francisco this week, but I believe they have the Bengals and then maybe the Eagles after that. They have some games that are going to be pretty tough. Do you think they take the necessary time with Dez, or how do you think that shakes out?
Well, if they don't take the necessary time with Bryant, they're being unbelievably foolish, and so I suspect they will. And I do think it's probably going to be an issue for them. You know, one thing about Dak Prescott, as well as he's played, he has not been really reliant on Dez Bryant. Actually, Cole Beasley is his favorite target.
Right.
And, you know, I think one of the reasons for that is because opposing defenses aren't stupid. They've been doing everything they can to take Bryant away. So the knee-jerk reaction, which is, oh, well, you know, he likes to throw to Cole Beasley anyway, that's because of what he's trying to beat and what defenses have shown him. So now, if they don't have to double up and try and take Dez Bryant away, they'll probably try and take Cole Beasley. So it's going to be a problem, and it's really interesting to see how Prescott reacts, because I know that I may be the only person left in the NFL who's not on the Dak Prescott bandwagon yet, and I'm not. I mean, the kids played great. There's no question about it. Definitely looking like a real steal in the fourth round. But again, these three-week conclusions about whether he's the heir apparent to Tony Romo, there's a lot left to learn, and this could be a really significant and interesting test over the next couple of weeks to see if he can avoid skipping a beat, you know, without Dez Bryant out there to distract the defense.
Right, and you can throw Lyle Collins into that conversation, maybe Tyron Smith. So there is some adversity beginning to hit that Cowboys offense. Will be fun to watch. Hub, on the way out, just a few more minutes here with Hub Arkish, publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. I want to stay in the NFC East and what I think is probably the game of the week, but it's also a good segue because I have to ask, Should the Giants be worried about the immaturity of Odell Beckham at this point? Ben McAdoo called him out publicly this week, and there's no question in my mind that he was an absolute distraction in that home meltdown against Washington.
Well, you know, I don't think you can ignore it. You know, whether you worry about it is a kind of, you know, it's a coaching question and a technique thing. I think that we've seen enough different kinds of instances that you have to be concerned. I'd probably say yes about the maturity. You know, they called it the emotionalism. You know, he got my guess is after the silly battle with kicking that, that he was as much embarrassed as anything else. And so, you know, your mind can start to take over for you. The sideline shot of the tears coming down his cheeks, though, is that's a bad image. That's not one you want on an NFL sideline, particularly in your star player. Right. And so I think, to me, this one is one where there's got to be a veteran, and maybe it's Eli, who gets this kid aside off the field. You know, they've got to start to work on him probably more in the locker room and the meeting rooms than necessarily on the field, and help him grow up, because that's probably all we're talking about in this case.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating next matchup. Odell obviously has a week to forget, and Hub just mentioned the antics on the sideline, and obviously the last image everyone had of their head was in their head was Odell kind of headhunting Josh Norman last year. So you put all that aside, he is, you know, a talent-wise a top five receiver in the NFL, but for my money, he now gets the best group of cornerbacks in the league in Minnesota, heads to the new Viking Stadium, where obviously he didn't make the trip last year because he was suspended. So just your quick thoughts on this matchup and, you know, what it means for the Vikings now at home, hosting the Giants still undefeated, and how New York has to bounce back from what we just discussed.
Yeah, real quickly, I just have to add, whenever we go back to the Josh Norman thing and you talk about headhunting from Beckham, that was on Josh Norman. Josh Norman instigated that whole thing. He threw the first cheap shots. Beckham, as we're discussing, needs to grow up, needs to know how to handle it. He can react very well. But that one doesn't even concern me as much as the stuff we saw, you know, this past Sunday. Again, it's a year later. He's supposed to be growing as an NFL vet, and so I think that's where the problems lie. You're right. Great football game Monday night. I think the Vikings are the best team in the NFC right now. I don't know that I see the talent that's going to allow them to be that come week 15, 16, 17. On the offense, obviously Stephon Diggs is becoming a special receiver. As you know, I said the minute I heard about the trade for Bradford, I thought it made sense and it looked like a good trade. It's continuing to look that way. But still beyond that, can Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata and maybe Ronnie Hillman give them enough to get some balance with a ground game? We know the defense is going to be great. We know it's a challenge for that Giants offense and for Odell Beckham Jr., but where you flip it around is where it gets interesting. This Giants defense has played much better, particularly against the run. So great football game. I think because it's at home, just the second game in Minnesota Stadium, and we know how vicious that pass rush can be and that Giants offensive line is struggling, you probably have to really like the Vikings' chances, but should be interesting. I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants give them a game, and that would speak to whether the Giants are the best team in the NFC East.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. One of the games I'm most looking forward to. Hub, I'm going to let you on your way. I know you are pulling up to Hallis Hall and getting ready to go take in the Friday practice there. So thank you so much for hopping back on the PFW podcast, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week.
All right, Arthur. We'll talk to you later.
And great stuff from Hub, as always. We do appreciate him being on the podcast. I'm tempted to tell you that's going to become a weekly fixture, because it's fun to not only because I don't really get to talk to Hub unless we're talking football over the airwaves, but because rather than listening to my opinions, I know you'd like to hear his actual expert one. So if Hub's willing, and I'm pretty sure he is, we'll try and make that a weekly fixture to bring him on for just a couple minutes. That's going to do it for today's Pro Football Weekly podcast. Again, I so appreciate you being with us. I hope you enjoy week 4 in the NFL. And on the way out, one more reminder, we would love it if you were subscribing to us on iTunes, and make sure you're leaving feedback so we know what we can do better starting next week when we bring you the new edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks again to all my guests, Jim Wexel of SteelCityInsiders.net, Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential, and Hub Arkish of Pro Football Weekly, and about 8 other titles. We appreciate you guys being here, but not as much as you, the listener, being here. We'll look forward to chatting with you again next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.